serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and the unique story of 92-year-old Bill Barkley of Las Vegas, Nevada, originally from Trenton, New Jersey. Of 11 children in his family, he was the only one to end up in the Navy during World War II. And just like his story has a recent twist with the incredible worldwide response to what some thoughtless vandals did to his flag, Bill's ship has a 21st century epilogue as well. I told you that he served on the destroyer escort USS Stockdale, but I didn't tell you who that ship was named for. Lewis Stephen Stockdale of Anaconda, Montana, was a 27-year-old ensign aboard the battleship USS Oklahoma on December 7, 1941. Stockdale became one of 429 members of the Oklahoma's crew to die as a result of that surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. 2 years later, with our guest today, Bill Barkley, there as part of the original crew, the USS Stockdale was christened with the fallen sailor's mother and grandmother in attendance. But just last year, 2016, forensic technology allowed military researchers to identify the remains of five men who had been buried in Hawaii as unknowns after Pearl Harbor. Among those five was Ensign Lewis Stockdale. Interestingly enough, one of the gifts Bill Barkley has received in recent months is a flag that had flown as the flag of the unknown sailor, a distinction that, until last year's identification of Lewis Stockdale, represented the very man Bill's ship was named for. As for Bill's 2 years on the Stockdale, I don't want to leave anything out. We heard him vividly describe the close call he survived on April 17, 1944, when his convoy was attacked by German planes near Algeria. But let's hear the rest of his adventures on that destroyer escort now. Besides people shooting at you and planes dropping bombs in the area and submarines surfacing, I bet you ran into some weather that wasn't exactly easy.
North Atlantic? Let me tell you. You have hammocks, three hammocks. The top man, there's white things. Mm-hmm. They're hot. Okay, you're this far from it. The middle one, if you get a fat guy, his belly's touching your stomach.
Uh-huh.
And the one on the bottom, that's the best one. Unless he's fat, he's going to get squashed too. So let me tell you. So one day, I had to be on watch. I was the middle guy, right?
Yeah.
So here's what happened. We went up in the air, and we looked. We was 100 feet up in the air, right? And as you look down, you see a big hole, and when you go up like this, you come down like this. As you come down, if you're leaving your hammock, the ship goes like this, it goes like this. It's the whole ship, you can hear it shaking like a little crack.
That's how big the swells were.
100 feet and the hole. In other words, and we got lost, we was lost at sea for 3 days. They sent a message to my mother that I was lost at sea. If we couldn't navigate the ship, we couldn't control it. We did that for 3 days.
And you were the only ship there?
Yeah, only ship there.
What had happened to separate you from the others?
One of the ships in the convoy got lost, so we went out to get it. I said, what else should we go out there? We ain't got no protection, no nothing, you know? But captain, you have to take orders. So when I went on duty, you know, it happened a lot. It don't happen once. When you're in North Atlantic, every day you got a big storm. It's never smooth, never.
Mm-hmm.
Not like Pacific's nice. So anyway, I was on watch, and look, I go up like this here, and I look down and said, Skipper, man, that's a big hole. He said, yes, about 100 feet. Then I'm in my sack, you know, and it feels like your ship's cracking.
Right.
And that to do that all 24 hours, boy.
Just over and over again.
Because I'm scared. I said, we can't do nothing about it because we have no control of the ship. 3 days, and then I found out afterwards that we lost at sea. The skipper told us afterwards.
Yeah.
He got on a speaker. He said, we lost at sea. And right away, I people lost at sea. That means they got in the water and drowned, you know?
Yeah.
I said, how we lost at sea? We're still alive, you know? But we had no communication. In other words, the Navy knows where your ship is 24 hours a day. You know that.
Right.
But we didn't have no way to contact. If they try to contact, they said 3 days, we contacted the destroyer escort, and they must have got lost at sea. They must have drowned.
Uh-huh. What did you appreciate the most about the guys you served with?
Well, We never had a problem with it. We had a problem with one officer, though. See, whenever you lose an officer for some reason, you can't go without that same kind of position. If he's a navigator or something, you have to go to the next port, and there's a guy waiting, the same rating as that officer,
right,
and he comes aboard. You can't, if you got a guy on a 20-millimeter, there's a Trojan works your feet, Trojan operator,
yeah,
and the guy puts the 360 rounds in while you're shooting. Say they come in and they shot the guy who loads my gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the Trojan operator has to get on and do that. If I was a gunner then you have to regulate your gun yourself. But the other way, he regulates your feet and all.
Right.
So this one guy, I never forget, his name was Reed. My other five officers were all good. I told you they treat you like, the skipper says you treat like brothers. So anyway, he come aboard. The first night, I have watch. When I have watch, if I don't have a cigarette, I have it with the gunners in the gunner tour. There's five guys in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there. So the skipper never knew it. Four guys would sleep, and the other guy be awake. So from the deck, the skipper, the lieutenant on the deck, he'll say, "How you doing down there, gun two?" "Oh, okay, okay." You know, and we ain't supposed to sleep. You can get killed in court-martial, you know.
Sure.
So one day, he called and he said, "How come you don't answer me right away? You're a real strict officer, you know." I said, "Officers don't talk like that to us, you know." So this one guy was on a battleship. He was on an aircraft carrier. He had about 16 years. Christ, he's got about 20 ribbons. His name was Ski. So he was on watch with me one day, and about a week later, he said, "I'm coming down here and find out you guys better not be sleeping. There's a court martial." He's telling us, reading the book, what they happened and all that. So Ski got on, he was on the phone. So he said, "Give me that phone, Bill." I was on the phone. And he said, "Hello, this is Ski Exampsy talking." He said, "Lieutenant Reed, if you come down this gun turret, I'm going to throw you to the sharks." That's what he said to him on the, you know, you can get court martial talking that way.
Yeah.
So he had a captain's mask. And then the skipper, he has a smart guy, you know, and he likes, if you're in action, he wants you to be good and all like that, you know. Anyway, he didn't do nothing to him. And after he said, "We're all duty with the skipper." He said, "We're sitting there." And when he gets by, he says, "You're supposed to stand up and stand at attention and salute me." He said, "How long has he been doing that?" He said, "For about a month." He said, "He told you had to salute him?" I said, "Yeah." The next port, we landed. Be standing by the gangplank, and he had a suitcase and all. He salutes the flag, salutes the officer on watch. And I said, "What happened?" Then we found out that skipper got rid of him. Imagine that. So we got a new guy, and boy, he was really good.
There's not that many guys who served in Europe and in the Pacific, especially in the Navy. You did both. You made trips to Europe and in the Pacific.
And up in the Pacific, yeah.
What are you most proud of when it comes to your time in the Navy? When you think back on it now, what do you look at and say, you know, I'm really proud that I did this or I was a part of this?
I know in Atlantic, when we took convoy to over England, coming back, big hospital ship, they had all wounded, about 2,000 veterans, and some of them were whacking their head and all. I got pictures of it. This Marine, and the waves were real big. He jumped over in the water. So they wired our ship and said, "Man overboard." So I got my, I see him in the water. And
you looked through binoculars and saw where he was.
I saw him in the water. In the water, it's like it, and the waves were going like this, covering it, like, you know what I mean? You, one minute you see something, next minute you don't.
Sure.
So I threw the life preserver to him. I said, he's not catching it. So he's going to drown. He has no chance. So one of our guys says, "Hell, I'm going in after him." He dove right in and got him out.
Wow.
He dove in. I got a picture of him in the water with the life preserver on him. This guy dove right in. I said, "Why'd you do that?" He said, "The guy's dying." He didn't know he was a wounded Marine. Then we found out that he was, you know.
Sure, he wanted to end it. He was thinking these injuries are too
much
to
bear. Well, he didn't know. I bet he didn't know. I bet he didn't know he jumped in the water.
Ah.
I asked a psychiatrist one day. He says, half time they do stuff they don't know they're doing it. In other words, when he jumped in, he didn't know he was doing it.
So you got a firsthand taste of the physical and psychological wounds of war. You ended up getting to the Japanese island of Honshu just in time for the signing of the surrender documents in September 1945. You stayed in the Navy till 1946. And I'm going to fast forward about 65 years. You're living here in Las Vegas. Your son puts up a flagpole in your yard. And ever since then, you've been flying the Stars and Stripes every day, as well as the Navy flag.
And nobody ever had them. So when we went out that morning, the Navy flag was burnt to ashes, and you saw the picture of America. So I called my neighbor said, call Channel 13. And when I called them, they said, boy, you're glad you did.
So they not only burned the flags on your flagpole, you have smaller flags that are attached to the top of your car.
They burned those, too. And they burned top of the roof.
And you walked outside and you saw all that.
Yeah.
And how did you feel?
Oh, man. See, first thing I thought about on the ship, I was putting the flag up on our ship and all.
So when you were in the Navy, one of the things you had to do was raise the flag.
Yeah, now and then, yeah.
Uh-huh. So you've got this flag now in front of your house 70 years after World War II. Vandals come and they torch it, but it gets on the TV news here. And I imagine you didn't know what to expect. You didn't know if anyone was going to do anything about it or not, right?
And they were here every day for 14 days, every day.
Well, and as you look back now, one of the worst things that happened to you has turned into one of the best things because of response.
That's what everybody tells me, but yeah. I don't, you know.
So tell us some of the things that have happened since that local TV station put out the word about these vandals burning your flag. What have people done for you since then?
They've painted my house.
Uh-huh.
And two of the painters painted a flag out there. Nobody, you can't touch that flag.
So where you park, there's a brick wall, and it's painted with an American flag, and it also says that you were in the Navy from 1943 to 46.
Yeah.
And not only did they paint that on there in large, visible from the street fashion, they covered it with an anti-graffiti film so no one can mess it up.
You can paint it, you can put anything on it. All you do, Bill, if you want to, call us and we'll come and wipe it off. But I said, just get a clean rag, look, and go like this, it'll come right off.
And they replaced your flags?
The submarine gave me flags. That's good news there.
Well, there's two flagpoles on top of your artificial turf out there in the yard now.
One of them is the flag, and underneath is a Navy flag. And the other one is a submarine flag.
Active U.S. submarine sent you
It's a nuclear. Hey, you ought to put nuclear action submarine.
So they hear about it. They send you the flag from their ship. You've got a Navy flag and an American flag that flew over the U.S. Capitol earlier this year. But who put those flagpoles up for you?
Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association. They help all veterans. In other words, like mine, they found out and they come around and see, what can I do for you? They put the flags up. They had the ceremony. You know, 20 of them came with their motorcycles and all morning they put them in there. And we had them all around there.
Yeah. And what about those flags on your car?
I got 18 of them more. Look, see up top there?
Yeah, you've got plenty of backups ready to go.
And I got 75 flags there.
So in the corner over here, there are 75 flags. Now, you had one American flag that got burned.
Yeah.
And now you've got 75 of them over there. Where'd they come from?
Neighbors and different states. Hawaii, all different states there.
People all over the country heard about this.
Yeah, and they send flags. Most of them, people brought them here. Mm-hmm. Like this lady, two blocks from me, let me tell you, she came over 11:30 at night. She said, Mr. Barkley, she said, my boyfriend got killed in Vietnam, and I had this flag. It's 10 by 20. Listen to this.
Ooh.
She said, will you put this flag up?
Well, and you also have a flag that was flown in Afghanistan that was sent you.
It's a combat plane. What's it say up there?
Flag was flown on a combat reconnaissance mission.
And a captain sent it to me, two of them. He sent me two of them.
So a reconnaissance plane flew this flag. You've got two flags that flew there in Afghanistan. And we could keep going down the list. You've got a framed letter there with a photo.
Her son, yeah.
Well, and when they burned the flags on your car, they burned the top of your car, right?
Yeah, just a little bit. But still, you have to take care of it.
Well, yeah, and you would have to pay a lot of money to get that fixed.
Yeah, the car dealer did it for nothing.
He did it for nothing, and he even gave you a new car to drive while he fixed it.
Yeah, and they didn't charge me nothing. I met the owner and all. He said, anytime you want to do it, if you want to buy another car, I'll help you out. But my sons gave me this for Christmas.
What about Home Depot? What'd they do for you?
Home Depot? See all that, where the flowers are? That used to be dirt all the way in my yard. Every year, $100 I pay, put stuff down, never grew. So what they did, they put them red bricks there.
Yep.
And over there. And then they went to a florist. And the florist said, what are you going to do with these flowers? They said, we're going to put them for me. And they said, no charge. Take what you want. Then she went to another florist, And they have found out of it. He said, what are you going to do with these? And Home Depot guy said, if we're going to put them there. He said, no charge. So all them flags were for them. And them red bricks out here, they put for me because they know I sit out there at night. Them trees and all, the florist gave us that.
Mm-hmm.
And they put that brown stuff all around. And then the grass, artificial grass, Lowe's did that.
For free.
Free.
Maybe we shouldn't say free, but in return for his service to our country all those years ago, and in response to the symbolism of this proud veteran's flags being burned, that careless act of hatred or disregard has now been completely drowned out by a continuing stream of love and generosity. The dozens of flags we talked about, I don't think we even mentioned that the very next day, a crew from nearby Nellis Air Force Base was there with a brand new flag. The help he received with his car, his yard, his house, a new state-of-the-art security system to keep track of all of it. Isn't it something to see people in Las Vegas and all over the country stand up and prove that this is one thing people from all different backgrounds really can't agree with? You mess with a World War II veteran like Bill Barkley, you mess with all of us. Check out those photos and videos at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Thanks again to Gina Lazara from KTNV in Las Vegas for sharing her perspective. And thank you for spending this hour with us. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you can join us again next time when we again meet a proud veteran of World War II with a unique story to tell. And we're reminded once again that freedom is not free.